All right, I think we should be honest with ourselves here. The future is starting to look like a dumpster fire, and not even the fun kind where you get to roast marshmallows. Unfortunately, it's the kind where the smoke is giving you a very specific, very expensive form of lung cancer. So we've been fed two choices for so long that our brains have pretty much turned into lukewarm oatmeal. Now, choice A, we have the cyberpunk hellscape. You know the one. It's always raining. Everyone's wearing leather pants that they definitely can't afford. And we're all basically indentured servants to a trillionaire who looks something like a hairless cat in a turtleneck. Sure, it looks kind of cool in that Blade Runner-esque aesthetic, but let's face it, it's bleak, and this is really just the brutal end result of techno-feudalism. And I don't want to hack a mainframe just to get a glass of synthetic water. I'm tired. And then there's choice B, which is the techno-utopian fantasy. So this is the one where a guy probably in Silicon Valley, promises that if we can just give him enough venture capital and let an AI write our poetry, the polar ice caps will somehow miraculously freeze back together, and out of sheer respect for our amazing innovation. That is a lie wrapped in a TED talk. It's like that book, The Secret, but with microchips and algorithms. But then there's this potential third option. It's this kind of weird, unassuming, slightly mossy thing called solar punk. Now, I know what you're probably thinking. Solar punk, really? Sounds like a subgenre of literature for people who have a bunker out in the desert full of crystals and studded leather jackets. And yeah, on the surface, it might look like a Pinterest board for a commune that's one bad harvest away from becoming a cult. But I think if you just look past the stereotyping and the aesthetic, the images of Art Nouveau skyscrapers covered in ivy, I think there's something actually terrifyingly practical and sensible about it. Solar punk isn't Pollyanna. Pollyanna is for people who haven't been paying attention. Solar punk is something much heavier. It's grief that decided to put on a pair of work gloves, and it's what hope looks like after you've already accepted that the world as we know it is dead and buried, and it isn't coming back for any sequels. It's ultimately the realization that while the end of the world might be an appropriate title for a movie, in reality, the world doesn't usually end. It just continues on in whatever new and dysfunctional form it's going to take. And I think here's where solar punk asks a very dark, very dry question. Once everything has fallen apart, do you want to die in the ruins, or do you want to start composting the bodies and grow some tomatoes? So let's talk about the punk in solar. Because it's not just about the sun, it's about the audacity to stay sane while the ship is taking on water. So, in order to understand solar punk, I think you have to understand that it's a rejection of the so-called big solution. We seem to have this obsession with big solutions. We want a giant vacuum to basically suck the carbon out of the air, and we want like a Mars colony, so we can leave our mess behind like a bad Airbnb guest. Solar punk says no. There's no Daddy Warbucks coming to save us. There's only us and whatever we can fix with a greasy wrench and some backbone. So the first pillar of this whole thing is it's technology as a tool, not as some god. In our current world, technology is like a deity. We're sacrificing our privacy and our attention spans and our time and our dignity to this. And we disrupt things just to see them break. Solar punk looks at a high-tech gadget and it asks, does this actually help me talk to my neighbor? Or does it just make it easier for a corporation to sell my anxieties back to me? So it's about appropriate technology. Maybe we don't need a fridge that tweets or whatever. Maybe we just need a fridge that's actually easy to repair when the grid gets shaky. Then there's ecological integration. This is the part that gets greenwashed a lot, but the core is brutal because it's really the admission that humans aren't the managers of the planet. We're actually more like the bacteria in the planet's gut. If we kill the host, we're out of a job, right? So Solar Punk tries to imagine, tries to imagine cities that don't look like concrete scars on the face of the planet, but more like part of the, blend in with the local ecosystem. It's not really about saving the environment. I mean, the environment's going to be there after we're gone. It's more about making sure that we're still invited to the party. Now, the third pillar is decentralization. This is where the punk really lives. Our current systems are efficient, which is just a fancy way of saying they're incredibly fragile. If one boat gets stuck in the Panama Canal, millions of tons of grain supply is cut off. Now, Solar Punk wants systems that are small and local. And this is the important part, allowed to fail gracefully. So if your community's microgrid goes down, the next town over is fine. It's basically the total opposite of too big to fail. It's small enough to fix. And finally, there's cultural imagination. This is the aesthetic part. You know, some people like to mock the drawings of sun-drenched balconies and wind turbines that look like sculptures. But, you know, here's the thing. You can't build a future that you can't imagine. The only future we see is a smoking crater. Well, I mean, if the only future we see is a smoking crater and a sterile I guess, Apple Store. Well, then that's the one we're going to get, right? Solarpunk is an attempt to make a sustainable future look, well, sexy, or at least cozy. It's trying to give us something to move toward rather than something to run away from. It's the difference between I'm not smoking because I'm afraid of cancer, and I'm not smoking because I want to be able to breathe when I'm hiking. One of these is fueled by fear, and the other is fueled by a desire for a life that doesn't actually suck. Now, I wouldn't be me if I didn't start, or if I didn't point out that some of this sounds like absolute horseshit. If you spend 5 minutes on the Solarpunk subreddit, you might see what I mean. It can feel a little naive, I guess. Sometimes it looks like Instagram hope, you know, lots of golden hour lighting and white people in linen tunics holding baskets of organic kale or whatever. It's easy to turn a radical political movement into a vibe. But you can't just put a solar panel on a skyscraper owned by a predatory bank and then call it Solarpunk. That's just greenwashed late-stage capitalism. Sort of like putting a flower in the barrel of a gun that's still aimed at your head. And let's talk about the power aspect of this. I think this might be the biggest hole in the Solarpunk bucket. Systems of power don't collapse politely. The people who own the fossil fuels and all the data and the land, I guess, at this point, aren't going to look at a community garden and say, gosh, that's lovely. I'll just hand over my billions and start weeding the carrots. Solarpunk, I think, often skips the messy middle. It'll show us the beautiful ending where everyone's happy and the air is clean, but I think it leaves out the part where we have to fight through the mud to get there. It overlooks the reality of conflict. It's an ending in search of a plot. There's also this weird drift into moral purity, where there's an implicit pressure to be the perfect Solarpunk citizen. You have to compost every single thing. You have to be ethically conscious of every purchase. You got to be the pillar of your community. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm tired. Most people are exhausted. They're working three jobs and eating processed trash because they don't have the time or the mental bandwidth to care about the conviviality of tools. So if Solarpunk becomes one of these clubs for the morally superior, it's basically dead on arrival. I actually believe we need a version of the future that has room for people who are a little lazy and grumpy and, you know, occasionally selfish. Because honestly, that's just the human condition. That's our natural state. Solarpunk knows what it wants in the final chapter of the book, but it's currently staring at a blank page in the middle chapters. It's like a vision of the afterlife, but we're all stuck in the hospital waiting room. All right. I think we should talk about the part that most people skip, the transition. Solar punk imagery is usually on the, I'd say, the subdued side. It's a drawing of a kid reading a book in a hammock made of recycled fishing nets, which is nice, but it doesn't show the reality of 20 years of legislative warfare and the riots over water rights, or the sheer grinding boredom of trying to convince a homeowners association to let you plant corn in your front yard. Because systems don't just transform because we made a nice mood board. The people who currently hold the keys to the kingdom, the ones who profit every time you pump gas or click buy now, they probably aren't going to have an epiphany because they saw a cool mural of a sun-powered tractor. So the messy middle, where solar punk gets is, well, that's where solar punk gets his teeth. It's not just gardening. It's more like guerrilla gardening. It's a realization that if the system won't provide for you, you have to build a parallel system that makes the old one irrelevant. This is what Buckminster Fuller meant when he said, you never change things by fighting the existing reality. To change something, build a new model that makes the existing model obsolete. But building that model is a fistfight. At the very least, it's going to be very uncomfortable and inconvenient, and it's going to involve getting your hands dirty in ways that aren't at all aesthetic. It's going to involve politics, the boring, soul-sucking kind. It involves community meetings where you realize that your neighbors are actually kind of annoying, but you have to work with them anyway because they're the ones who share your watershed and share your vision, ultimately. And solar punk isn't just some easy-peasy retreat into the woods to play homesteading while the world is burning. That's just survivalism for people with better taste. Actually, solar punk is more about staying in the city and staying in the suburbs and just refusing to let them turn into or remain dystopian deserts. In some ways, it's the punk of the 1977 variety, you know, the do-it-yourself ethos that says, well, if the record labels won't sign us, then we'll just start our own label in a garage. Only instead of a record label, it's a neighborhood solar cooperative. And maybe instead of a mosh pit, it's a seed swap. The seed swap can still include the music. That doesn't have to go away. So it's less about fighting the man and more about ignoring the man until he realizes that he just doesn't have anyone left to lord over. I think if we're going to take solar punk thing seriously, we got to look at the people who were dreaming about this before it ever had a hashtag. These aren't just influencers. These are grizzled ancestors of a future that hasn't actually even happened yet. So let's take Ursula K. Le Guin. If you haven't read The Dispossessed, you should. Or don't. I'm not your dad. But in it, she describes an anarchist moon colony. And it's not a utopia. It's dusty, it's difficult, and realistically, everyone's kind of annoyed with each other at the situation. But on the other hand, they're free. And Le Guin understood that the biggest obstacle to a better world isn't a lack of technology, it's a lack of imagination. So she famously said that we live in capitalism and its power, of course, seems totally inescapable. But then, so did the divine right of kings. And we made it past that somehow. Solar punk is basically the challenge accepted to that quote. It's the attempt to imagine the after. Then you have E.F. Schumacher, and he wrote a book called Small is Beautiful, which is basically the solar punk Bible written way back in the 1970s. So Schumacher was actually an economist, which usually means he'd be the antagonist in this story. But he had this crazy idea that maybe an economy should serve people instead of people serving the economy. So he talked about this concept, intermediate technology, which is stuff that's better than a hand plow but doesn't require a PhD and a global supply chain to fix. It's basically the philosophy of good enough. It's realizing that a giant centralized power plant is a miracle until a tree falls on some wires and then a million people lose their air conditioning during a heat wave. Schumacher wanted us to be small and local and persevering. He probably would have hated Instagram, but would have loved a well-built community windmill. And we can't talk about this topic without mentioning Ivan Illich. So this guy was the king of functional melancholy. He wrote a book titled Tools of Conviviality. Now, convivial sounds like a word for a wine tasting or something, but for Illich, it meant tools that give you more power over your own life. So, for example, a bicycle is a convivial tool. You can fix it. You can move it or power it with your own legs. It doesn't track your location and sell it to an insurance company. Not yet, anyway. But a car, on the other hand, not so much. Because a car dictates where you can live, how much insurance you have to buy, how many hours you have to sit in traffic staring at a bumper sticker on another car, how many repairs it's going to need, and so on. Illich's whole thing was about limits. He argued that there's a point where a tool stops being a servant and it starts being a master. Solar punk is the act of firing the master and going back to the bicycle without also becoming a complete Luddite. So if cyberpunk asks what happens when technology wins, solar punk asks what happens when we just choose restraint? And the thing is, restraint is a hard sell in a world that wants you to move fast and break things and then buy more things. But breaking things is pretty easy. I mean, any toddler can break a vase. The punk part of solar punk is the refusal to break things. It's the decision to stay and try to repair. So it's looking at a broken world and saying, I'm not leaving. I'm going to make this work, even if I have to do it with duct tape and a curmudgeonly attitude. All right. So there's a reason you're watching this, and there's a reason that maybe you feel that low-grade hum of anxiety every time you open your phone. We are the first generation in history to be hyper-aware of our own extinction in real time. To me, it looks like we're more or less doom-scrolling our way into a collective nervous breakdown. The human brain wasn't designed to process the suffering of 8 billion people at one time. We were designed to care about a community of maybe 50 or 100 people and whether or not the local river is clean enough for drinking and bathing. Solar punk is, at its core, a psychological survival strategy. Psychologists talk about this concept of internal locus of control, which is the feeling that you actually have some say in your life. But cyberpunk and techno-utopianism both strip that away. In cyberpunk, the corporations are just too massive. You're just a bug on the windshield. In techno-utopia, the AI is too advanced, so you're just a passenger. And unfortunately, both of these paths lead to learned helplessness. Solarpunk, on the other hand, gives you your agency back. But it does it in a very humble way. It doesn't tell you that you can, heroically save the planet, but it tells you that you can save a specific plot of dirt where you can learn how to fix a radio or grow some food and where you can build a relationship with the people who live half a block away. This is radical acceptance in action. It's acknowledging that the climate is changing, the economy's weird, the future's very uncertain, and then deciding to do something small regardless. So it's a way to just to stop the freeze response. When you spend your afternoon repairing a chair instead of buying a new one, you aren't just being sustainable. You're reminding your brain that you're a participant in the world and not just a mindless consumer of it. It's like you're telling the nihilism in the back of your head to just shut up for 20 minutes because you have a job to do. It's about finding meaning in the aftermath and finding a place in the anti-ambition movement. You know, we've been told that if we aren't changing the world, that we're failing. But solarpunk says that just staying sane and helping your neighbor stay sane is a massive revolutionary victory. Okay. So what happens now? Are we just supposed to stare at pictures of ivy-covered buildings while the world just falls apart. Well, that's an option, but maybe there's a way to live solar punk without being, you know, optimistically or toxically positively delusional. I think maybe the first solution is, again, radical acceptance. And not the pretending everything is fine kind of acceptance, but the everything is broken, so I might as well try to be useful kind. It's moving past the shock of the collapse and into the what now phase. And, you know, if you can accept that the old world's gone, you can just stop living in denial and wasting energy trying to resuscitate its corpse. And you start looking for the people in your neighborhood who actually know how to fix things. The second is the mastery of limits. So we're constantly being brainwashed to believe that more is the only direction. Solar punk suggests that enough is actually a much more interesting destination, because there's a strange kind of liberation in saying, I don't need a faster phone. I need a better relationship with my brother or even with myself. It's essentially Ivan Illich's idea that tools should be convivial. They should give us more agency, not take it away. Okay. Third, build the small version now. We don't need a global revolution to start a tool library. And we don't need some government mandate to learn how to grow a potato or fix a toaster. These things aren't just hobbies. They're more like rehearsals that we're practicing for a world where the big systems have finally collapsed. So if cyberpunk is asking what happens when technology wins, and the answer is, well, we lose our souls, then solar punk is asking what happens when we choose restraint and we look at things from a more sustainable, pragmatic perspective. And the answer is we might actually get to keep each other. I don't think solar punk is a promise that everything is going to be okay. I think it's a promise that even when things aren't okay, there's still work to be done. And I think it's the kind of work that's worth doing as opposed to all this dead-end, pointless labor that many of us are immersed in right now. Solar punk is the realization that hoping for some kind of more sustainable future, like love, it isn't just a feeling, it's a practice. And it's what you do when you're tired of being cynical, but you're too smart and maybe just a little too proactive to be delusional. So, in a sense, it's the functional melancholy of the human condition. We're smart enough to know that we're probably doomed, but we're stubborn enough to plant a tree anyway. And it's not because the tree is going to save the world or anything. It's because it makes you the kind of person who plants a tree while knowing you'll never sit in its shade. But maybe someone or something else will someday. And that's a comforting thought somehow, in spite of everything. Okay, that's all I've got today. As always, thanks for watching.